step inside the tribe as our market experts share their boots on the ground experience from the front lines of freight tech's emergence. I'm Tim Dooner, and this is Freight Waves Insiders.
Hey, welcome back to the show where we go inside the career journeys and brand stories of our guests. And today's a really interesting one because I'm talking to someone who is very intertwined in my own career story. He actually gave me my shot in professionally podcasting. It's the CEO of Freight Plus. They actually go by a different name, but he's the same man. He's Steve Aborn. What's up, dude?
Hey, Tim. It's been a while. How are you?
How are things treating you over there in the South Shore right now? You guys have grown. I was on your website, right? And when I was there, we were maybe like 8-9 employees. And now I counted at least 22 of you.
Yeah, I think we're up cool between 35 and 40 now. So we got a full staff. It's really kind of taken off in the last 18 months or so. So it's been good. We just moved office. We're having a bit of a soiree tonight. We're in Quincy, North Quincy. It's very, very fancy. It's a beautiful, beautiful space. We lucked out. We were looking at a bunch of different places and just kind of landed an awesome space. Really upgraded from, you know, the Cape that we were at right off the highway in Norwell, Mass, when you were with us.
it was a great spot for me because at the time I lived like 10 minutes from there. So it was a joy to come in and get the job that I guess within like remote work now, not such a big deal. Do you have most of the staff coming into the office? You guys up to speed in Tennessee? This, you know, we've taken down restrictions at Freight Waves things. Everyone here is kind of almost acting like at least in the Chattanooga area, acting like the pandemic never happened. Is Boston pretty much restored back to normal?
Yeah, I think at this point, Boston's pretty much back to normal. You know, we have basically everyone back in the office at this point. Like we were chatting before, was at the Red Sox game last Friday, full stands, no masks, everybody, you know, eating hot dogs, drinking some beers and having a good time. So it feels pretty normal.
It does. It feels good. It feels good to be
nice.
Back.
I know.
It does, man. People need it, and it's good to see people again. I know you've had some mutual friends in the industry at the office last week, so I'm sure you had a great time speaking with them. But people who aren't familiar, you know, I started with you guys when you were Aborn and Company, and the smaller company, the little engine that could. And for a company that's still a pretty small company, you've been getting a lot of ink lately. You've done a good job promoting and marketing yourself. But for those who may not have heard, what is Freight Plus? Give me the elevator.
Sure. So we're a managed transportation provider. So we moved from the consulting business, you know, really long history in consulting with, you know, Fortune 100 type of brands, right? Did a lot of great work in the consulting space for companies like Sony, Novartis, and really large companies. And kind of the way that we've turned the business around the last couple of years, not turn it around, but change some things is really in the managed transportation space. And so what we're trying to do is take a lot of those, you know, Fortune 100 principles that we learned when we were consultants and, you know, apply them to growing brands, middle market companies, startups, companies that are looking to act and, you know, punch a little bit above their weight class, excuse me. So, it's really just a combination of a lot of the stuff on the procurement and sourcing side that we've been doing for years, a lot of technology, and then a lot of great people and kind of strategic support teams for our customers.
So what does it mean to be the CEO of Freight Plus in the summer of 2021, other than going to Sox games and scouting new offices?
I think it's a lot of time. But you mentioned we're growing really quickly, which means, you know, recruiting and hiring. So I think the whole, you know, it's a lot of change, right? So it's managing, a business model change at the beginning of 2020, hiring and onboarding new people, setting up new departments. So it's, you know, the name of the game is change and kind of how you react right now. So it's a, you know, it's a ton of fun. We have a lot of momentum. And it's really just, it's about execution and, you know, starting to try to build that brand as a really solid managed transportation provider. Not a lot of freight companies out of the greater Boston area. So, you know, trying to kind of stand up in a different part of the country in the freight world.
To understand your lens and the way in which you see the world, we like to go back in time in this show. So think back to when you're 16 years old, Steve, Milton Academy, I believe it was. What did you think you were going to be when you grew up? I know you went on to college to play football. You go to Harvard, but when you're in high school, what are you thinking? You think you're going to be in freight?
No, not freight, honestly. I always kind of thought I wanted to be, you know, an entrepreneur, just someone that was going to take a shot. I didn't really know what it was going to be, but I wanted to have a company. I wanted to try my hand at business. And my uncle Russ is actually the one that started the company, the consulting company in 1988. He was the one, he and Jill Clifford, who you know very, very well as well. They were really the ones that were consulting with those large companies. And so they had sold like 95% of their company off years ago and kind of approached me. And we had 3-4 people in an office in Norwell. So I was in Seattle and at Amazon at the time. And they approached me and said, you know, would you be interested in coming back and trying to grow a company? And so that's what I did. Picked up, left Seattle, moved back home and went to work, in Norwell, Mass, on the South Shore of Boston. And so I don't know that it was necessarily freight that I wanted to do. It's really interesting. I had I was in a supply chain role at Amazon. So, you know, I think the data aspect of freight and logistics and how analytical it was always intrigued me. And so when I got an opportunity to start to figure something out in the freight world, I think we took to it. To answer your question, I don't know that it was always freight, but I think my mentality was it was always going to be something. And the first opportunity that really I got that my uncle was kind enough to give me and help me out, I took it and we've tried to run with it from there.
Now, Steve, not all of us are smart enough to be a Barney, to get into Harvard and all those kind of things. So what do they teach you, smart kids over there at Harvard? What kind of education you get?
I liberal arts, which is super practical. You know, I did English in economics, and I took a lot of cool classes. Honestly, one of my favorite classes was a class on jazz and culture in New Orleans and kind of the intersection of like Louis Armstrong and how that was changing people's perspective and bringing new cultures throughout the world. So there's all these like really cool, interesting classes that you couldn't really major in. You can't be a jazz history major at Harvard, but I ended up settling on English. I figured if there was one thing, if there's one thing that I could do at the end of school, it would be write effectively. So that's always, I think that's always been with me at the heart of my career. Amazon's kind of famous for our 6-pagers and our white papers, right? And so the writing ability definitely helped me, helped me at Harvard, and I think it helps the company now. So nothing, real liberal arts stuff, but it was good. It was an unbelievable network and a great time.
So how'd you end up at one of the FANG companies like Amazon?
One of my best friends I played football with, Amazon had never recruited undergraduates. It was all MBAs. And so it was all Stanford kids and Harvard MBA, a lot of kids from Michigan. And they'd never recruited undergraduates before. And so they launched this program where they were going to go and recruit undergrads for the first time ever. This kid who was a year above me in school, my best friend, I actually married him, and he was the best man in my wedding in February. He went out and he was like, hey, you should take a look at this company, Amazon. I really like it. Seattle's cool. Everyone says it rains all the time. It kind of does, but you can ski and it's on the water and it's a pretty good spot to live. I thought I was going to do banking. Honestly, that was kind of where my internships had been, where I'd kind of had some experience working, and I went out there and honestly, what sold me more than anything was the interview process. It was collaborative, it was case driven. Everyone was really bright and everyone was working together to solve a problem. And I think with my athletics background, that felt like a really natural fit. So I ended up turning down a couple of banks in Boston and New York and moving out to Seattle and going to work in tech, which was honestly one of the best decisions I ever made. It's a great company. It taught me a lot. It was like a really high paced environment. People were very competitive, but in a collaborative way. It wasn't like, we're going to compete and I'm going to bury you so that I can go to the top. It was, we have a high opinion of our work. We're going to work together. We're going to solve big problems. We're going to have autonomy, and we're going to drive great results. So it was a ton of fun. I loved Amazon. I it's kind of funny. People ask you about Amazon a lot. And I was there, you know, when that famous kind of New York Times article came out that talked about the work culture and how, you know, how brutal it was. And it was hard. It was absolutely hard. But it was a ton of fun. It was just, I really took to it.
Now, one thing that stuck with me in my time working with you was one of the, I think it was the last event you and I went to was at BOC at the Port of Boston. I'm not going to name the keynote speaker, but they were very dismissive at the, and this was 2019. This was not that long ago. They were very dismissive about the logistics prowess and the threat of Amazon in providing transportation, taking market share, all of those kind of things. Now, you have intimate knowledge because you worked inside Amazon on supply chain, and you kind of snickered at what that keynote was saying. What is Amazon? What did you learn there in that time while being in the supply chain? Because it seems pretty compelling what you must have done over there.
Yeah, I think, honestly, the thing that struck me when I kind of got out of there and started, you know, looking, trying to build a business and talking to other businesses was just, Amazon was so systems driven. Everything, you know, automation is a buzzword, right? Everyone likes to talk about automation, but a lot of folks in companies, and we see this all over the place, don't commit to automation. Automation is expensive, right? And so, you know, you and I used to talk about this all the time, right? Like that, the Excel based TMS, right? I don't need a TMS. I have an Excel workbook, right? Like, well, you know, how do you automate around an Excel workbook? Like, not, the answer is not very well, right? So I think that was kind of the thing that struck me, was just, you know, how data driven everything was, how automation, how system driven everything was. Nothing was about solving kind of like local problems, right? It was about solving problems at the highest ability, you know, that was going to solve, you know, for this use case, but every 1,000 use cases going forward. And it was all, you know, it was all driven by engineers and systems. And so, you know, and I think the growth rate, like just the rate that Amazon was growing at, right, their ability to open, you know, investing in new facilities all around the country. You know, I think that's probably why I was kind of snickering, is just the pure investment in the capabilities that they have. You know, versus, you know, at that time, some of the ways that we would interface with carriers, right? Like we would say, you kind of look at a carrier and you look at their capabilities, and then you'd look back at Amazon and you're like, I think they'll be pretty competitive in the long run and someone we should all be thinking and talking about.
Yeah, one of the most controversial but interesting and smart things that Amazon seems to do that a lot of shippers themselves don't seem to do is understand their supply chain, their cost of goods, and what transportation goes into it. And then you have someone like Amazon who's looking at this sea of data, and there are times when they notice these same inefficiencies, and they're like, you know what? We can do this better than you can out of China, and we'll do our own Amazon Basics product line, which is definitely controversial in the sense that if you're a shipper and you're giving freight to someone, like, what are they doing with this data? But at the same time, it's the nature of business, and it's also a warning shot that, like, you should be looking this closely at your transportation and your cost of goods and your invoicing and what it takes to bring what's basically the blood vessels, your inventory, over to this country.
Well, I mean, absolutely. And I think that data, right, like we've seen it over the last 15 months, year and a half, like that data and the ability to access that, it really gives you a level of resiliency that puts you in a, you know, behind the eight ball if you don't have that, right? And just, you know, you kind of brought up the granularity of the data. You know, we go into a prospecting situation sometimes and we'll be asking for, you know, maybe 8-9 data points in a spreadsheet, right? Where's it coming from? Where is it going to? If it's LTL, kind of what's the freight class? What are the products? Things like that. And you know, just kind of reflecting on the level and granularity of data that someone like Amazon has. I remember we would print out a report and it would go like 150 different columns over, all categorizing, you know, what this cost was and what this cost was, and breaking down, you know, every single variable and fixed cost that they had that you could ever think of. So I think when you're trying to compete at a global scale against someone like that, it's probably much better if you think of them as a partner rather than a competitor, right? How can we use Amazon? How can they be an asset to our business? Just because they, you know, it really is such a great, profound business.
So at what point, because I mean, it would seem you're on this career trajectory, right? Harvard graduate, you're over at Amazon, you're already on this amazing pathway. A lot of people would be like, I'm right where I need to be. My next step might be go down to Silicon Valley, maybe go work for Google, maybe go work for Facebook. I can deal with their marketplace. It's all set up for you. And you're like, nah, I think I'll go to the South Shore of Massachusetts and work in an office with four people. What came over you?
I think it was, you know, kind of going back to what we were talking about. I always saw myself, you know, doing my own thing, kind of setting my own schedule. And, I couldn't do that at Amazon, right? And if I went to Facebook, if I went to Tesla, I remember I had conversations with them. It was like, I'm going to be one of 1,000, 2,000, 10,000. I mean, Amazon at the time, when I was in Seattle, was small relative to now. I think there were 10,000 corporate employees in Seattle, 10 or 12,000. Now I think they have like over 150 or 200,000 employees in Seattle alone. But I think it was just, you know, kind of having the confidence in myself that you know, I want to try something. I want to try to build something. And I was at an age too, where my backup plan, I was like, if I really screw this up, I could probably go to business school and figure something out. So I think it was just kind of the right time. You know, something that I had always, you know, kind of talked to friends about, you know, what if we started this business? What if we started small stuff and it wouldn't, you know, it wasn't great. But we'd write it out and kind of go through that practice. And so, you know, where I had the opportunity with what, you know, Jill and Russ were able to build, there was a brand, there was a business clearly that had been successful. They had worked with some great companies. You know, I think if you spend an hour in a room, any room with Jill Clifford, you walk away, you know, better and smarter. And, you know, it just her capabilities, figured this feels and looks like the right time and place.
So you walk in the building over at Avon & Company. What do you know that you have to do? Like you're looking around and it's a great company, strong bones. You just mentioned it. You got Russ, you have Jill there. They really know what they're doing. Maybe the only missing step is they also need to be aware of some of the modern principles that are coming in and that kind of thing. And it seems like when you got in there, you started instituting some of those things right away. What was that like coming into sort of a legacy? It's like a startup. It's like you're in like a 30-year-old startup at that point, right?
Yeah, we talk about it all the time. That's exactly what it is. I think what we tried to do immediately is a big part of our story and where we ended up. And you were there for part of this is immediately, just based on my background and the way that I kind of learned about, you know, business and how to operate business and how to think about business and how to make decisions was all Amazon. And so I went from a system where there were unbelievable systems, right? We kind of talked about the strength of their systems and the granularity of their data to a situation where there was really none of that. And where, you know, where transportation logistics is potentially so data driven, I think what we immediately started to do was, you know, kind of refashion ourselves as really a data driven consulting company, right? And so how can we access as much data as possible, you know, categorize that, store that and use that to make decisions on behalf of customers and kind of attract new customers. And you know, I think what we found over a couple of years of working and trying to work like that is that a lot of companies were struggling with data, right? And so it wasn't really a situation where we were going to be able to get data from them. We needed to come to the shippers and come with a solution so that we could get the data to make decisions. And I think that's, you know, that's really where we started launching down the technology path is what can we do to help these companies and also collect the information that we want. So that we can do, you know, follow a best practice and really drive value for the customers. And so, you know, I think eventually that kind of turned into TMS and it turned into all the business intelligence work that we're doing now with BI tools and, you know, data and analytics. It was really a big part of how we ended up in the managed trans space, right? It was like we needed to be able to provide a solution for our customers that would give them that level of granularity, that level of visibility. So that they could compete and, you know, and deliver into the Amazons, deliver into the Walmarts and be able to measure that and understand what was going on and get better at it.
The reason like our ships crossed in the night and how I met you was similar as your approach to the market, but this side was on the marketing side and what you wanted to bring in. And we met at a crucial time in my career. I had just started the Shipping Pod, which is an independent podcast. I started in January of 2017 and I'd been doing it for a few months, but I was also unemployed. I'd gotten fired from my sales job in November of that year, and I was kind of needing something to do, right? My wife had our kid in November of that, our second kid in November. So I was going broke. I was going a lot of interviews. I remember I went to DSV. I went to Blue Grace. Both of them said, yeah, you could have a job, but you have to stop your podcast. And I just got fired from a sales job, Steve. I wasn't really that interested in stopping what I was doing. I thought this was a pretty good horse to ride. I thought people weren't addressing the market in the way that I was planning on doing it. And fortunately, you became a listener. And we started talking. I initially started writing some blogs for you. But what was your thought process there on marketing?
I think there, you know, I remember actually I lived in Dorchester right outside of Andrew Square. And I remember like parking and listening to the Shipping Pod. I drove home from work and I was parked and I was listening to it. And I was listening to you and Ryan have a conversation about, you know, it was one of the first ones that you guys had done. And you were talking about how everyone in transportation and logistics was, you know, was 700 years old and wasn't thinking about things creatively. And, you know, and you guys were just kind of, you know, throwing up on each other and, you know, and, but in a very real way. Right. And I remember, we didn't have any money to spend really as a business at the time either. Right. And so we were looking for, I think we were looking for cost-effective, creative ways to be different. And to be modern and to talk to customers in a more modern tone, to be conversational, to be people. And you were one of the only ones that were doing anything like that. I think there were a couple other podcasts that have been around for longer, but they were, you know, they were monotoned and they were, you know, I've heard you talk about them almost as webinars, right? And so it would be, hey, CEO of this giant 3PL, come on and tell me about this product for an hour and a half. And it was, it just wasn't compelling. It wasn't anything that I really wanted to listen to. And I just figured if we could get people to listen to this and understand and think about our brand and our company, then when we had somebody call them, right, they might understand, hey, that's that Aborn Co. I listen to them. They're thinking about things differently. They sound different. Maybe I should give them the time of day. And so it was, you know, really looking at, and, you know, like you, I was a big consumer of podcasts. I've been listening to podcasts for years and years and years and years. And at the time, no one was really using them for business, right? It was all, you know, it was friends or, you know, comedians, right? That's really who was, you know, hosting podcasts were comedians or friends on a topic or deep dives on a certain topic. And there weren't a lot of companies using them for business. And so it was, you know, we didn't really have any money to pay for advertising. We didn't really have any money to bring somebody on in a full-time marketing capacity, but where you were doing that, you know, how could, it's the old, like, how can we create a mutually beneficial relationship, right? And, you know, and I think that's kind of how we ended up together.
Yeah, it was the initial, you know, oxygen that really gave me life in those early stages. And I always appreciate that. And, you know, I always feel somewhat indebted to you for the rest of my life, because I wouldn't be doing this now if, you know, I had been like, you know, I got to feed the kids. I'm going to go work for DSV or somebody. Now, there's anything wrong with DSV, but I'm much happier doing what I'm doing now, not doing that kind of stuff. And it was cool because eventually you did raise a little bit more capital and you were like, you know what, we're going to bring you full time on as director of marketing. We launched Consulting Logistics, which I eventually had to walk away from to come over here to Chattanooga and do what I'm doing now. But you brought in a great kid. You brought in Kyle McNaught. Consulting Logistics is, I don't know, 150 some odd episodes now. So it seems like it's worked out really well.
Yeah. Yeah, it really has. You know, and I love, you know, I love listening to you and your TED talk and, you know, just being able to see what you've been able to accomplish. You know, it's been super enjoyable for us to kind of, to just watch you grow. So I, you know, you love going on different podcasts and talking about how, you know, when you were working with us, you were scheming to go work with Craig Fuller and Freightwaves. Don't think I don't listen to those ones, Tim. I've heard you tell that story a couple of times.
Look, Steve, when I interviewed, I'm like, I got to get on this company's radar. Because what I was doing was news write-ups for you guys. And like, they kept getting higher up there. And I saw their stuff. And it was like, it was great. Mm-hmm. I love Steve. I love the team. But I don't like making decks. I'm sick of making decks for RFPs.
I get it.
No, it was one of those things where it's a conversation. It worked out well. And that's what podcasting is about, right? Having those conversations with people, getting on their radar, and increasing business in some way or another. I guess you had to wash the taste of me out of your mouth, though, because now you're not even called Aborn & Company anymore. You're called Freight Plus. When did the rebrand come around, and when did you start streaming movies?
Rebrand was January of 2020. So we went through a couple of business opportunities at the end of 2019. And I think we saw some opportunities in the market, and we wanted to really jump into managed trans and brokerage in a big way. And so that's, you know, that's what we did to launch 2020. I think we got our MC authority on like March 11th or something, and then March 15th the whole world shuts down for you know 15 months. So it was pretty fun, but for years we were Aborn & Co, and that was intentional. You know, we wanted to sound like a consulting company because that's the work that we were doing. And so I think for us, as we kind of rethought about, you know, the brand and rethought about how we wanted to communicate and what we wanted that to look and sound like, we weren't a consulting company anymore. We'd kind of evolved, we'd moved past that. And so, you know, it was really, how do we sound, you know, how do we sound different? How do we sound more like we are? And how do we build something that can eventually become a brand? And so that's really where Freight Plus came from, you know, because it's Freight Plus.
Plus other stuff. I get it. Yeah, you're not streaming movies on there. Although, you know, what we did, speaking of streaming movies, we just secured the license to Convoy.
I know. I was going to ask you about that. I don't know. What do you got going on?
Okay, so here's the plan. I'll let the listeners have a little exclusive here. What's going on? So, like all great ideas in startups, these things don't happen in meetings. They happen in late night Slacks. And someone says, hey, we secured this thing. And it's almost like a gauge interest. Who would want it? And I immediately was like, look, I have an idea. I grew up watching like Joe Bob Briggs on Monster Vision on late night cable, where there's like, you know, the host who introduces the show, they give you facts about the show, they bring on like old actors and all that kind of stuff. They you know, give information and factual stuff, but it's fun and irreverent, crossed with like Mystery Science Theater. So we're going to have some truckers come in. We're going to do a watch along. We're going to build some segments around it. We might, you know, try and get Chris Christopherson on there, talk to some old school truckers who are around at that time and really build some content around it. As you know, my whole goal is to make freight mainstream. And I think that we're going in that direction, Steve. But for people who are listening, right, managed transportation, I had worked in a 3PL. And one thing I've noticed in freight is that when people work in a certain vertical in this business, it's easy to get blinders on, especially since we use different terminologies and stuff. So what is managed transportation? How does that separate it? And especially what like Aborn & Co. used to be, how does that separate it from a traditional 3PL that people may be thinking about?
Yeah, totally. So we don't really do any transactional brokerage. I think when people think about truckload brokerage, they think about, you know, a lot of the work that Robinson does, some of the work that Arrive or some of these other large, fast growing companies are, where you come in, you quote on a lane, you quote on a load, you run some spot loads. That's not our business at all. So, you know, I think what the reason we like managed trans is it goes back to the consulting, right? We like long-term strategic partnerships. And so the way that managed trans works is we sign, you know, usually 3 or 5 year deals with a shipper, and we're really the exclusive partner for them. And we support them with everything from technology. We really try to differentiate on the customer service model, right? You get a team. So if you work with us, you have resources on the technical side, on the data side, the business intelligence side, the customer support side, the freight movement side, the load planning side, working on optimizations, right? How can we combine loads? How can we find efficiencies? You know, and so it's everything. We kind of talk about the people, the process, and the technology. You know, the process is really a lot of the strategy consulting work that we've been doing for 30 plus years, the RFP work. How do we bring that to a population and a part of the market that doesn't necessarily have the ability to do robust negotiations across their network every quarter, right? It's just really, really expensive for companies in the middle market and for growing companies to bring on that talent, to really allocate that much energy towards best practices in transportation. So the way we think about it is, you know, just giving those companies the tools to be successful and really to compete. And so it's, you know, again, it's everything from a TMS. You know, we have, I think you guys publish your list of the top like 25 technologies every year. And if we look at our TMS, we have, I think we're integrated with like 16 or 17 out of the top 25. So it's, you know, and it's a product that we've been, you know, working on and building for 4 years. So you really get a robust kind of best in class technology, right? You get that data, the data and business intelligence, and then you get a really strong account management team that's meeting with you, talking about forecasts, talking about customer insights that we gain, and really talking about the future, you know, what's going on in your business. And so, you know, I think it gives us the opportunity to try to talk more about business issues than, you know, what is the cost of a load?
Yeah, the biggest eye-opening thing for me when joining there was I had been on the 3PL side. I'd both done operations with freight and I'd done freight sales. And when we would do RFPs for freight sales, there was a limited number of partners we could work with. So when you're constructing together an RFP, you had like your favorite carriers, your valued carriers, but you still had, you only had so much scope of a network. It wasn't huge. And I thought what was eye-opening when I joined Aborn was looking at your RFP process and all the other partners you're going to bring in, and you'd see all these efficiencies within these routing guides, especially in LTL. So why do you think that routing guides are such a mess? Is it because of the way that 3PLs are just structured in general, where they have partners that they work with and they are going to give them freight regardless of the value to you? They're trying to optimize their network more so than they're trying to optimize yours. If yours aligns with that, great.
Great. Right. Then it's a good partnership. But I think that's exactly it, is we're kind of provider agnostic. And I think the other thing that we really, really hammer home on our operations team is to be strategic in our partnerships. I think one thing that we see a lot in the transactional space is I'm going to use, you know, trucking company A on Monday, B on Tuesday, you know, C on Wednesday. And for us, it's really about doing the due diligence up front and finding those companies that, you know, you're using the right provider at the right price and the right level of service, and you're using trucking company, you know, A Monday through Friday, right? It's all about partnerships and network fit. And it's a lot of work, right? There's a lot of upfront work. But again, that's the benefit of managed trans, is we have a longer view of the world, right? We're not trying to optimize for Monday on Monday and Tuesday on Tuesday. It's, you know, it's about this week, next year, and really finding the right network fit and being agnostic to the provider. It's about the best level of service and cost.
Now, I had my buddy, the Goodwill Hunting of Freight, Chris Peckham, on What the Truck about almost like 3 months ago now. And at the time, he gave us this great quote. He said, every mode of transportation is a dumpster fire. Every mode of transportation is still a dumpster fire, but how bad is it? Right? Like Union Pacific right now, they just said that they're canceling freight for a week. So this is going to air from a week from now. So hopefully freight from Union Pacific has moved now. But I talked to Christy Knickel from Knickel Logistics. Not an easy one to say because the K is not silent. And my mind doesn't like to say that, Steve. But she said that even getting freight off the West Coast into Chicago via intermodal, via rail, is a nightmare right now. What are you seeing? And as you're trying to grow through this pandemic, when freight really started getting really bad, how do you manage transportation when it's almost unmanageable?
Yeah, sure. You do the best that you can. I think, you know, it's about partnership, especially on the carrier level. I think, you know, a lot of trucking companies have been burned over and over and over again by shippers, burned by 3PLs, right? And again, I think it's about trying to communicate our value prop to them. Hey, we are managed trans. This is our load today. It's our load tomorrow. It's our load on Wednesday. Can you come to the table and can we have a discussion about how we're going to operate this, right? And I think those, I'll kind of give you a little bit of an example is, we looked at a company that ended up doing some business with us, and they, you know, they had about 500 moves in a point-to-point lane. And we were, you know, just through the data that we collected, we were able to see the underlying carriers. And, you know, they used about 350, the company that they were working with previously used about 350 different trucking companies on 500 lanes, right? And so when we take over that business, and now that it's operating in our network, we found five or six different trucking companies who this freight perfectly fits their network. It took us a couple months. It took us a lot of calls. It took us a lot of explanation, but we've really been able to calm down that lane. And so I think the way that you do it is really, you know, it's no secret. It's about, you know, it's about partnership. It's about, you know, treating carriers on time. It's about communicating, you know, why you're different and what you're going to do. And then after you communicate that to them, it's about holding up your end of the bargain, right? It's about being good partners. So I think, you know, it's been tough. Like I said, we, you know, last March is really when we got our MC authority and started in the, you know, we didn't really start in the business until September of last year, just because of everything that was happening. But it was a wild time to launch a completely new business segment in a really high growth environment. But I, you know, I think it's kind of the same story, right? It's about partnership and holding up your end of the bargain.
Do you think that we ever break out of this sort of carrier shipper cycle of abuse where it's always tit for tat? It's always, you know, sometimes it's cutting your nose to spite your face, but because the market's so volatile, who's ever at the top acts like they're king, right? And we can treat each other better on both sides, but it just doesn't seem to happen because everyone wants to get theirs when the getting's good.
I don't know that it'll really profoundly stop until somehow we have, to me, I always go back to the fragmentation in the market, right? There's just so many unique players. If you look at cell phones, if you look at cars, if you look at any other large industry, you see consolidation in maybe 5 or 10 different companies, right? And in trucking, there's so many independent operators, so many different players. It feels like you have too many actors in the space in order to get everyone behave in the same way. And so, you know, it does get a little bit cyclical where on the rates going up, people are fighting, the rates are going down, people are fighting. And again, I keep preaching kind of managed trans, but for us, that's the benefit, right? When the rates go up, we understand the market. We're, you know, Chris does a great job. Kyle does a great job on our market reports on a monthly basis, you know, talking about understanding, you know, transportation markets, and we want to be fair partners. So when rates are going up, we want them, let's talk, let's figure it out with the carriers. And when rates are going down, you know, we expect the same, right? Let's talk, let's figure it out. Let's make sure that this works for both of us in the long term.
Everybody complains
about...
But
to answer your question, no. I don't see any change anytime soon. No.
Well, since we all have to work together, one of the ways we work together is with RFPs. And that can be a glorious process when you win. It can be a heartbreaking one when you lose. What do you think of the current RFP process? Is it broken? Can it be iterated upon? I'm sure it could be better, right?
I think it has to be quicker, especially the way the market moves, right? I mean, we see this all the time. I think we need all operators ready to make decisions in a much quicker environment. Just the way that the market moves. I mean, you guys do a lot of reporting on it through Sonar. Sometimes you go through an RFP and it takes 2 or 3 months to in the truckload space to complete. Well, it's a totally different market, right? And so you go to launch with these carriers in the truckload, you know, in the truckload markets, and they're like, yeah, we gave you those rates 3 months ago. Like, what do you mean? It's a totally different world. So I think kind of step one is, you know, how do we iterate down that quicker? How do we get there quicker? And I think that'll solve some of the problems of RFPs. And I think you're starting to see that a little bit with more technology being introduced, right? More people are building technology to do a lot of that analysis and to kind of iterate on those bids quickly.
The wins are, you know, the wins come quick. They feel great. The ones that tend to linger and stick longer but actually hold the most lessons are the losses. I was a part of one where it was a huge project, right? And it was a long project and it took a ton of meetings, but we were going to save this company a few million dollars over one of the biggest brokers in the world, but it didn't go through. We didn't get it. In those kind of situations where the team has devoted so much time and there's a little bit at stake, how do you manage the team's reaction and your own, especially in a smaller company, to keep pushing forward?
I think on all the times that we've gone through process like that, it's really been about the learning, right? And especially when you're working with bigger companies, they're pushing you. They're telling you what, you know, they're giving you requirements. They're pushing you in different directions. They're giving you insights into their business. And I think for us, whenever we've lost those big opportunities, it's tough. It's brutal. You put months and months of work into it. But if you look back and you look at, you know, like how can that change my business? What did I learn about our business and maybe where we need to beef up some capabilities or where, you know, manufacturers and distributors, where their focus is, where their attention are, like what, again, it comes down to what business problems are they trying to solve? And usually when you go through those processes with a bigger company, they're telling you what, you know, the direction that they're moving in. So I think, you know, every time that we've gone through a process like that, it's flowed through into our business on a day-to-day basis in some positive way.
Compare and contrast this year to last year. And I know that it can be a little harder in a fast-moving, fast-growing company because when you look back and reflect on last year or even the year before that, it's like, just as the rates had changed that quickly, so does the dynamic of a company. So, but do your best comparing 2020 to now. What has changed about the market? Is it harder to operate or you get, even though it's bad, you're getting more footing because you know what to expect?
I think it's easier. I think most folks on our team would say that it's easier. I think it was tough last year, especially for us, right? If you think about where we were at last year in that brutal market, we were a brand new company with a brand new authority, right? And so trucking companies, factoring companies, we're trying to explain ourselves, hey, we're not fly by the seat of the pants broker. We're trying to do the right thing here. So I think there's some kind of operational big picture things that are much better for us. But I also think there's more of a mutual understanding on the shipper and the carrier side about, you know, how to operate, right? I think there was a lot of confusion last year and a lot of folks talking past each other. And it feels like while rates are still really high, we're in a much better spot in terms of having realistic conversations on both sides between the shippers and the carriers.
What was the learning curve of that, of bringing brokerage on and figuring out what you need to do there? And again, in a situation that's a trial by fire coming into that bad market where, again, 30-year-old startup, but day one for this new service. So you have to overcome that perception.
Yeah, I think the learning and it's not as much of a learning, but it's about attracting great people and on some level getting lucky with great people, right? And then when you find great people that do a great job for you, you know, trying to support them, listen to them, ask them what they need and give them the tools to be successful. I think, you know, where we stumbled and where we fell down, maybe we didn't have the right people in the seat and we weren't giving them the tools or the support to be successful. And I think, you know, if I look back and reflect on some of the misses in launching the brokerage, it was we either had the wrong person in the seat or we sat back and didn't act quick enough.
Yeah. It's all about speed, especially in startups. I mean, especially when 20 people, one person is what, 5% of your staff, but they could be 100% of a department or they could be 100% of multiple departments.
It happens all the time still. Yeah. It happens all the time.
You're like, yeah. Someone left. Okay. Well, that's our podcast guy, our marketing guy.
Yeah. Marketing guy. Now we don't have a marketing guy.
Yeah. Now we need to fill a few gaps.
Yeah. I was on vacation and got a call and you know, I think you should call Tim. We lost our marketing department.
Okay. So what happened too? So I interviewed Craig Fuller though. I was like one day I need to go over to this company, right? I'm like probably a year, 2 years from now, I'll probably end up over at FreightWaves. I didn't think I'd get a DM a week later.
You were like, do you think I can go down there? Craig wants to meet with me. You think I should go down there? And I was like, I wonder what's happening. Go ahead, Tim.
Thank you for letting me go, sir. Thank you. I do appreciate it.
Yeah. You gotta do your thing.
Kyle's doing an awesome job. Let's talk about hiring, because this is a tough market. Everyone's talking about the great resignation, right? Everyone's afraid of inflation. So you got the psyche of a lot of employees, especially after a year of lockdown, being in virtual, a lot of friendships and a lot of work relationships severed. People want a fresh start. And it's very natural, and you can't blame people, especially right now, and everybody seems to be hiring, and there's a lot of opportunity. So how do you retain people right now, and how do you attract people, Steve?
Sure. I think people say it, but it's culture. And you know, Ryan and I had a conversation on consulting logistics last week, and you know, culture isn't about pool tables and happy hours and all that. It's about, it's just what we were just talking about. It's about listening to people. It's about figuring out what direction they want to grow in. I think that's something that I've always been kind of proud about our culture, right? Is you came in and you had a perspective on the world and we didn't inhibit that, right? Like we kind of talked about what we were trying to accomplish and some of the stuff that, you know, we wanted as the business and in your case, you wanted to do as a marketer and a podcaster and we made it work. And so I think it's about, you know, it's about flexibility. It's about finding talented, passionate people that really care about what they're doing and then talking to them, listening to them, giving them a level of autonomy and letting them grow in their own way. Right. And I think that's really what we've learned. Also the importance of onboarding, right. Onboarding's, it was brutal to bring on, you know, 20 new people in the middle of a pandemic when that's 200% of your workforce, right. It was brand new for us.
What's something when you think about this market that you wish more of your partners know? What's something that you find yourself explaining a lot, but it would be really valuable if this was either common knowledge when dealing with either 3PLs or managed transportation providers?
I would say, honestly, it's probably on the manufacturer and distributor, on the shipper side, right? There are so many folks that are in roles that don't really understand how trucking companies work, right? And that's kind of mode agnostic. So I do think that there would be better partnerships if there was a greater understanding on, you know, you have, I remember when we brought on a new client, and they're great people, wonderful people. And, you know, one of the things, one of their practices was they needed the cost of a shipment at the time before tender, right? Like at that rate level. And they were shipping in the LTL space and they were really, really upset with us. You said that this was going to cost us $300. And we got you sent us the invoice and it was $450. How could you possibly do this? We're going to lose money. This is horrible. And really what happened is they added two pallets to the shipment. You know, right? And so you're like, well, it was three pallets and now it's five. Like the weight went up. And so the cost went up. It's in the LTL space. And so, and that's not their fault, right? And that's our job. And you know, again, one of the things that you and I used to talk about all the time is education. How do we bring education on both sides and kind of be an intermediary and more than just pick up and deliver freight, right? Like how do we educate this side? A about B and B about A and do it in a way that's entertaining and people actually want to listen to.
Boston Market, what's that like right now? I kind of miss it because I'm over here in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Boston has always been kind of a unique animal for me. I love Boston, but we got a small port over there. Sometimes we're almost like the redheaded stepchild of New York. We're always trying to fight for respect. We get that chip on our shoulder. But it was also an older scene too, right? It was an older scene over in that East Boston area. Has that changed at all? I was looking at your hiring page. I was noticing quite a few younger people joining the staff.
Yeah, we're pretty young. I think that's where we've had success is, again, trying to find those young, talented people, trying to find new, fresh perspectives on logistics, trying to take people, you know, from other industries who've had success and introduce them into freight. Because we're not in Chattanooga, we're not in Chicago, we're not in Los Angeles. There's not, really just a bevy of logistics talent here. And so, you know, I think we've tried to get, you know, young, intelligent, driven, ambitious, talented people and then teach them about the space, right? Again, it goes back to that education. How can we take those types of people and, customer driven people, problem solvers and teach them about logistics. Boston's great. I mean, it's the summer. Weather's nice. There's no drought, so there's plenty of rain. We can water our lawns. It's been a pretty good summer.
Yeah, great drivers too.
Yeah, listen, I lived in Seattle. Everyone complains about Boston drivers. You should go out to the West Coast. I mean, you were out there. You're in California.
Oh, sure.
Most people can't. They
well,
can't
Atlanta's
drive
scary.
A little bit.
I won't go down. Atlanta is a frightening place to drive, Steve. I don't know
if
you've been over.
Yeah. Oh yeah, there's like the highways are like 15 lanes wide. It's like the wild, everyone's flying across. It's great.
Well, tell me something. So there was big news that came out recently. AAA Cooper, Knight Swift picked them up, big amount of money, money sloshing around. We're seeing more consolidation coming in LTL. Do you think we're going to continue to see that? You work with a lot of these carriers. Do you think we're going to continue to see that trend? And if so, is it good for the industry? I mean, trucking, if anywhere could use some consolidation, it's probably there because there's just so many freaking carriers in the United States.
Yeah. I mean, LTL is kind of the opposite, right? But I mean, there is, probably 40, 50, large LTL companies. I think you probably will see more of that. But I mean, how many more trucking companies could buy a whole LTL carrier? How many of them could afford it? Not many, right? Just if you look at the financials of it, in order to purchase something for $1.5 billion, somebody needs to underwrite that. So how many truckload providers other than Knight Swift could pull something like that off? The answer is probably not many. But as you look to kind of vertically integrate supply chains, it's a pretty compelling argument for a shipper and a manufacturer if they can single source things, right? If you can, that's one less integration, that's one less negotiation, it's one less throat to choke. So I totally see the value there, but I wonder how many times that can happen just with not a ton of LTL companies available and probably not a ton of truckload companies that can afford to pull a move like that.
We saw this last year when the market was at the bottom for trucking. You had a bunch of truckers who went down to Washington. They want to, because people only fight for these things when, for one, it benefits them and they're at the other end of the barrel, right? So truckers bent over the barrel last year. They want Trump to make changes. Shippers bent over a barrel this year. A lot by ocean carriers and rail. And ocean carriers is a hard one because we don't own most of these ocean carriers. So what can you really do? But Biden puts out this executive order. He strongly encourages ocean to play better, rail to play better, trucking to maybe play better. You think anything comes of this? Is this something regulation can actually fix when markets get like this? Or is this just the dynamic and how it is?
I mean, especially on the ocean side, I don't see those companies playing ball with the White House, right? Like, I just don't, there's no levers for them to pull. I think in a regulatory environment, the other thing is how much can you push back on those ocean providers, given what a how much Americans consume and import, right? And so at the end of the day, if you're going to put, heavy restrictions and potentially change the way that trade works, are the U.S., are the constituents going to put up with something like that? I don't know, right? Like there's a big conversation about, kind of nearshoring going on, especially after the pandemic. And we're seeing supply chains, we're seeing, really high rates in the ocean market and folks are, we're getting it from our customers. How if we were to pull this back, how should we think about it? How would we do it? But I think there's going to be some move towards, kind of nearshoring and bringing things back home. But I don't see that happening in an enormous way in the next, 5 to 10 years.
Well, and then the problem is in this industry, it's almost like doing the RFPs, except on a bigger scale. You go through all this effort, then you come back and all of a sudden Chinese freight's dirt cheap again, right? What are we doing about it? It's hard to make decisions in a world that's so dynamic because it keeps moving forward. And I think that's one of the challenges that shippers are always trying to face. And that's why there's this huge push for visibility and for data, but there's also this delta where a lot of companies aren't really figuring out how to utilize that properly, right? I mean, they're great buzz terms. They're fun to say in a boardroom, but what are you actually doing about it? When you talk to guys like Ryan Schreiber, who is down there, and you're talking and you're thinking about building out the offerings of freight, the plus side of that, what do you think is needed in this market right now? And what's your focus on?
I think especially for where we play, you kind of brought up the merger between AAA Cooper and Knight-Swift. I think, there's so many different technologies. There's so many different levers that you have to pull in order to be really good at this. And it kind of goes to our thesis is how can we vet and source the technology? How can we vet and source the carriers and package that in a way that goes, that benefits you and your company? And so, it's great that all of this technology is coming into the space and coming into the industry. But how can we, how can we as a third party be a resource to, to companies and help them get access to it? Because, it's very difficult for a company to vet and bring in maybe 5-6 different integrations, bring in a TMS, source it, vet it, stand it up. I mean, it's a lot, right?
This is the time capsule. This is your life, Steve. So I want you to come back. This is like when you were in kindergarten, your teacher told you to write down where you think you'll be. You open it up when you graduate from high school. So 5 years from now, you're rewatching this episode. Where do you think you are and Freight Plus is?
I think right now it's about growth. We're a young, hungry company. We're growing really, really quickly, on pace to grow really, 5X our business this year. So, it's a big number. I think we want to continue to grow and continue to add, I think for us, it's about finding opportunities to add value to that, to shippers, right? How can we be a partner? How can we understand their needs? How can we listen to them? I think if you look at, kind of how our product and our service has evolved over the last 5 years, it's been customer driven. It's been about, talking and listening to our customers, talking to, listening to the problems that they have, providing great customer service, and then going out and looking around at the different options and how can we help them? How can we change this? They don't like this thing. How can we support that? Hopefully it's a larger team. It's greater capabilities. I think it's a great culture. People, of problem solvers and really customer focused people. So that's where we're trying to get in 5 years.
The tech first companies, they'll always kind of, they have sometimes a more sci-fi vision of the future of what happening in freight. Freight tends to move kind of slowly. It takes a while for process to change for company. And it's probably very frustrating to a lot of these companies who get in and don't realize that. You have the fortune of having some background with Amazon and knowing a little bit about how freight works and also the experience at Freight Plus. Now, what do you think you think we're going to have a bunch of autonomous trucks? I mean, what do you think the world of freight is going to look like 5 years from now? Any different?
Oh, I think it'll be different. I mean, if you look back 5 years, I think there's a lot of things that's changed. There's a lot of improvements. You know, Silicon Valley's invested a ton, which is, has brought incremental change, right? You know, I think Ryan and I had a discussion about autonomous vehicles the other day on our pod on consulting logistics. I'd be kind of curious to hear what you think, but you know, I just from a regulatory perspective, it feels like an issue, right? Every time that a Tesla is unmanned and it runs over a pedestrian who jumped in the crossway, it's on the New York Times for a week, right? And then there's a pushback on that. Just where, you know, trucking is such a big job in the US, you know, where I think there is kind of a native fear of technology and, you know, it's a little bit of a dystopian view of you know, 50,000, you know, 50,000, 40,000 pounds of goods traveling down a highway with no one manning it. You know, I wonder how the government is going to approach that from a regulatory, you know, perspective.
Yeah, we just had an autonomous vehicle and electric summit. And, you know, the big thing that they still have to solve for, too, is just the weight of batteries. I mean, you want people to transition to electric and these autonomous systems. These things take up weight. And when you're going to sell to freight companies, the first thing, like, if this is taking a bunch of weight, this is going to remove freight from the truck, they're not going to be interested. And if you're trying to sell this to environmental people, once they learn that, okay, well, now because we can carry half as much freight, we have to drive twice as many trucks. I mean, that doesn't help anybody else either. So there's definitely those sort of, there's just sort of a, right now, there's a technological bottleneck that you mentioned Tesla. Even Elon Musk is trying to fix. He does his hype, he does his battery day, but I haven't seen that Tesla semi for sale yet. No, it hasn't been delivered any fleets yet.
No, and he was doing a tweet storm a couple of weeks ago, right, about some of the inefficiencies and how hard it really is to do autonomous. So, you know, I think there's technical challenges clearly and, you know, I think there's going to be regulatory challenges and potentially, to your point, environmental challenges. I mean, again, if you look at, you know, kind of like we just said 5 years ago, you know, everything is improved on a margin. I think, you know, that's probably a lot of truth in how we should start to think about AV, at least in the near term, right? It's going to make an impact. But in 5 or 10 years, is every truck on the road going to be driverless? No, of course not.
No. Of course not. Well, good thing Freight Plus is in driverless. They have you leading the charge over there, Steve. People who want to learn more about the company, they want to reach out to you. Maybe, I don't know if you're hiring or not, maybe they want to work for you.
We are. Yeah, we are. We're
hiring.
Where
do they go?
Hiring. Freightplus.io or LinkedIn. Yeah, LinkedIn. If you search LinkedIn for Freight Plus or Freightplus.io.
Now, before I let you go, let me ask you something. So you said you're in growth mode. There's been a lot of venture capital sloshing around. It's especially recently in the freight and the freight tech market. Are you going to be raising capital or are you going to kind of keep it bootstrapped like you folks have been doing?
Yeah, we actually found a great partner on the banking side. You know, kind of an interesting relationship, something that's pretty popular in the 3PL space. So probably not looking to raise any money anytime soon, but we do have a really strong financial partner, you know, that we're going to close on something later this year and that we're really excited about.
Nice. Well, next time I'm in the area, it won't be this time because I got to get to Cape Cod, but next time, well, I do. You're in Quincy now. I was like, did I drive past
Quincy, right by the highway.
I got to stop by and right kick your ass in Mortal Kombat. I heard you got some arcade machines in there. I got to brush up on my fatalities.
Yeah. We got it all, baby.
Okay, man.
a lot of Mortal Kombat.
All right. Who's your character?
Oh, man, I'm the one with all the arms.
Okay, Gorb.
You can throw as many punches. Yeah. All the arms. Yeah, right.
That's a little overpowered.
Strategic advantage.
It's a little overpowered, Steve. But okay. Well, hey everyone, thanks for joining us on Freightways Insider. It's been a good one. It's been awesome catching up with Steve again. This is the man that put the oxygen and lifeblood of the podcast that I'm doing now. Shows like this might not even at least exist in this format if I didn't run across him at some point in my life. You want to connect with me at Timothy Dooner on Twitter. That's DOONER. Want to be on the guest on the show, TDooner@freightwaves.com. Find the show wherever you get podcasts. Just look up Freightwaves Insiders. Or if you want to watch it, download the Freightwaves TV app. We'll catch you next week with trucker Ingrid Brown. Thank you, everybody, for letting us inside your world today.